Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Through the Tech Vine. So be quiet, pay attention, and get inspired. There is one truth that is not told enough. Technology is not magic, but it can be magical. Technology is human. It is part of who we are, our evolution, our future. Will it be a dystopian or utopian one? Well, that is up to us and nobody else. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
You're live.
We're live.
Do what you want with your name, but...
I was going to change it to Marco.
To confuse everyone. Just mix up a little bit, but thankfully for the one listening on the podcast, it doesn't really matter.
I could be Cipelli Kelly.
There you go.
Well, we were just talking about this before starting. It looks like we all have some roots in Italy. Me probably a little bit more than you two, but glad. Well, I was born there, so. But you guys have family there,
even if we don't speak it.
Yeah, maybe one day we'll have an entire podcast through the Tech Vine in Italian, which will be extremely weird for me as well.
Roman technology. You know who were very advanced technologically? The Romans.
So. Correct. That's true. We still have a lot of heritage from what they did. Well, maybe it's the next episode. Historical technology. You know, you got me on that one, right? You know me well. You know me well. So how's everything going? Are we excited for this new episode, which is confusing because as I'm writing down, it's number 2, but in reality it's number 3 because we had the 0.
Right.
And I'm wondering if on the when JJ join us, hopefully the
we
next
go back
one,
to 0.
We go back to 0 once again.
Is she going to be with us next week?
I believe so.
All right.
I'm counting down the days.
Super cool.
It's going to be fun. We're like, okay. But for today, hopefully she'll be listening to us. And then she's going to tell us all the things that we did wrong and all the things that hopefully did well.
Speak for yourself, man.
No, maybe she's going to have notes for us.
Maybe she'll have some good suggestion. You know, from a third perspective point of view, you may have something to help us to improve. Why not? I'm open.
We're still, I think JJ and I are still hoping we can get some sort of like game show aspect going.
That was the original idea. Yeah. I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, when you're live, there's no holding back. You just do whatever.
Absolutely. So let's see.
Etsy.
I gave some homework last time.
Yeah, my dog ate it.
Your dog ate it? Your real dog or your the dog that we don't know if it's a dog or not
dog
on the internet?
Virtual homework.
No, I gave some suggestion about maybe the topic was about around artificial intelligence, which may as well be because a lot of news nowadays are around artificial intelligence. So
probably hard to find something without it.
That's all right. So Sean, a little recap. Why don't you give us a little recap about what we're supposed to be doing here for our audience? Maybe there is somebody that hasn't heard our 0-1 and
0-1, and this becomes what 1-0? No, I forget how to do the billing. Anyway,
two.
Yes, episode 2 of the 3rd in the series. Anyway, we're confusing the hell out of everybody. This is about technology. I'm confusing everybody. Technology for good. So there, even today, I was just like, come on. Another breach of coding for gaming. And what are they going to release this code for? And for EA. And I'm like, all right, enough is enough. I'm really looking forward to today. We're going to look at technology, the positive angle of it. Where is it helping us as humans? Where is it helping us as society? Where is it taking us into the future? future could be today, right? Somebody could hear one of our three stories that we uncovered through the Tech Vine and go, wow, I could take advantage of that technology today, or I want to be part of that growth of that technology tomorrow. Who knows how it'll inspire folks, right? I think that's the goal, at least from my perspective, inspire people to look for technologies, understand technologies, talk about technologies, be part of technologies, take us to where we want the tech to take us, not just go where the tech takes us by default.
And that's the key. Take it where we want it to be and not be taken by it. And that's kind of like what we do here as well, is we look at the what if, or what Sean, you said last time, the WTF that I throw in there once in a while. But, you know, you have to be open-minded. And sometimes we think about something that may seem very good. And then, like, is it or is it not? Or what can we do to be sure that it is going to be good? And that's what we do here. So I say we just kick it in.
Let's do it.
Tradition says that Diana start.
That's right.
Okay, so I forgot about the AI.
So, well, I'm sure there's an AI in there somewhere.
We'll find a way to plug it in.
But AI might be able to help. And so the thing that really caught my eye this week is that a number of scientists presented a paper yesterday on some data that was not collectible before, and it's on these fast radio bursts. I don't know if you've heard about these, that they come from space. They're fast radio bursts. They're millisecond long flashes of light. So light goes in a spectrum and we can't see all light. We all know like there's infrared light. There's also apparently light inside the radio spectrum. In any case, that's how you get this, is that you get this is light that's in the radio spectrum. And these really fast bursts, and we've known that they're out there, but we haven't been able to capture enough of them because they come unpredictably. And a team up in Canada at the Radio Astrophysical Observatory in Canada came up with this telescope, but I guess it's a radio telescope. Quite frankly, that tech is a little above me. But anyway, it's called CHIME, and it's the Canadian Hydrogen Intensity Mapping Experiment Telescope. And what they were able to do was to catch 535 of these bursts over the course of a year, which is enough data to start analyzing it. And what they can tell is that these are coming from, I'm not kidding you, a galaxy far, far away a long time ago. So it could be Obi-Wan. That's not the leading theory, but it could be a communication from Obi-Wan. It could be like the Real Housewives of Galaxy, you know, Centurion or something. They don't know, but there's some interesting things in here scientifically now that this cool new telescope is able to capture these bursts more reliably. And one is that there are some one-offs coming, which is what a scientist would expect. But some of these bursts are coming from the same source, but not at what appears to be a regular pattern yet. If you capture things over a long enough period of time, you may find a pattern in there. But right now, over the course of the year for the data they're studying, it didn't have a pattern. So if it was from a natural source, it's more likely that that pulse would be coming at a regular discernible pattern. So who knows? Maybe it is another life forms. Maybe it's a natural source that's just coming in a long period. But I thought it was really cool that this new technology is now able to capture the data coming in from literally from outer space. And we can start to, at least with the data, study it a little bit more closely than we've been studying before.
So it's from a galaxy far away.
It is.
It's the whale song. It's a whale song.
Maybe we can hitchhike in the galaxy and go figure that out.
So, that's at 42.
42. That's the answer.
It is.
It's the answer to everything, life, and the universe, right?
Yes.
What kind of data? I mean, do they know that they're catching data, but do we know what kind of data so far?
Well, they're catching the bursts, which before CHIME existed, they weren't able to catch the burst because they're only milliseconds and they're not at any regular pattern. So, you know, you try to catch it. I think the Hubble telescope, which is more of an optical and less of a radio telescope, honestly, when you get into spectrums like that, I get a little bit, I'm no physicist, so Hubble's caught a few of them, but to be able to get all of these bursts, the 535 they got over the course of a year, was this, they needed this special telescope to be able to get them. So it's the bursts, it's the information about when the bursts occur, if they can try and figure out where the source is.
And they can actually try to capture it and then see what they can decode out of it?
Well, they can see things like periodicity, like how often it happens, and they're trying to figure out, like, they can find some information about source because mm-hmm. they're saying that there are two buckets, sources that repeat and sources that seem to be one-offs. So
all I want to know is if they're following the IDPR, the International Data Protection.
Oh, that's right.
They're collecting and storing this info without permission. The galactic
identifiable information.
I mean, it's already so complicated to go from one state to another here in the United States. GDPR is doing what it can. We don't know how to handle it at a global level. Can I even think about a Milky Way regulation? And now we're all the universe. I think we need to call Douglas Adams for this. He may have an answer in the guide, in the Hitchhiker Guide in the Universe. But no, what is exciting about this, and many people, it's kind of like when we were talking on the first episode about the exploration of space, the commercial tourism that can go up in space with the article from...
And Jeff Bezos is going.
And now it's going. Go figure out.
It's because of you, Marco.
Yeah.
He heard this.
I'm paying for his ticket. That's right. That's for sure.
Yeah, like
he needs that. I'm sure. Well, part of it probably. If a couple of products help. But what was the point there was, why do we do this? Why we are excited? Why are we excited about it? It's because it's about knowledge, it's about exploration, yeah. It's about, you always have to think, again, you know, I'm the guy that looks in the history, but it's the equivalent of when we didn't know what it was on the other side of the ocean, and we didn't know if the Earth was round or flat, and some people still not sure about that, but we send explorer, and then they came back, and it's exciting for us. Now it's an entire new frontier, but there are many references to that kind of exploration. Like, can we get there? How long is it going to take? Can we come back? Yeah. And what are we going to find there? I love it.
And Dana, does it give any sense of, is it a stream? You said it's a burst. So is it a finite start and stop set of stuff? And I'm wondering, I'm picturing a blob of things. So is it I'm wondering if they're like
a blob.
No, multiple streams of messages or content or data in this burst blob versus.
But they
last
for milliseconds. So it's very short. But if there's content in there, I mean, right, maybe if we knew how to read what was in that burst, then mm-hmm. there could be content. But yeah, they last for milliseconds. And they, in the first year of capturing data, they got 525 of them. Okay. So it's, I don't think if it's like some sort of intergalactic Morse code, it would be, I would anticipate it's going pretty slowly if there were 525 right. in the first year.
Right.
But also this telescope, interestingly, a lot of times when you do a radio, you know, these antennas, they move around and they're trying to, like, you know, like cat ears, you know, tuning themselves. Mm-hmm. But this one is actually fixed. And as the Earth rotates, it's getting, you know, it's getting different parts of our own universe. You know, it's facing in different ways. Getting
right.
Different
and that's an exciting thing. It comes from the same place. And it also, you said at the beginning that it's not a repetitive. So, like, let's say if it was a pulsar, Like sometimes we thought that the pulsar star was a message. In reality, it was, you know, the rotation on a certain period of time. But the fact that are more random,
yeah, you
know, maybe some radio station transmitting some alien rock. Something like that.
The Real Housewives of Alpha Centauri. I'm ready for the intergalactic Erica Jane. I'm here for it.
I probably watched that. I didn't watch this one, but I watched that. Awesome. Okay, so space exploration is always and discovery is always exciting because we do it for our future. So I love anything to do with that. I honestly can't find any negative aspect to it unless we want to go into our alien really exists, what they're going to do, and all of that kind of
thing. Or IDPR. I mean, it is true. There's some sort of personal data we need to not be looking at here.
That's right.
Well, maybe they're encrypted so well that we can even hack the message. Although,
there you go.
We're smart. I think we can get there.
It's all quantum.
I love it. Sean, what's up with you? Did your brain went? Did you go skiing again?
I skied down to the farm. I'm bringing it back to Earth. And again, I didn't go bananas tech-wise. It's more of just the general, this is good for us overall as humans. And it's around sustainability of in this particular case, dairy farming. There's a little known secret that I always had a dream and a vision that I would work in tech in farming or agriculture in general, and probably on a dairy farm, funny enough. And so I always envisioned connected cows before everything was connected. So my news is around, I actually found two different examples of this, but just connected farms that they're not just about the efficiency of the farm, but they're about the health and well-being of the dairy cattle and the supply chain of the milk that comes from multiple dairies that are also connected together, and the community that surrounds these and the support that they provide each other through the technology. And I mean, again, it's not overwhelming technically, technology-wise, but the cows, the sensors on the cows determine that the cow is ready to be milked, not at 6 a.m. or 4 a.m. when the milk crew says, now it's time. It's when the cow is ready. The cow was prompted to go into the barn and produce or provide the milk, and off it goes, and it monitors how much it eats and if it's getting the right amount of nutrients and all these different things. And if there's a problem on the farm, the community comes together through the technology to say, have you tried this? Or here's a solution to this downtime. Or we're seeing this stuff from the cows that you may want to be keeping an eye on. So it's all information to help make better decisions for better productivity, but also for a more sustainable farming environment.
It's a cow telemetry.
It is cow telemetry. That's why I'm wearing this cowish looking thing on my shirt. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, nice.
I have
Smokey.
I have my milk jug here as well, just for full effect.
I have my ally pen.
Jesus, you're all like
farming. I'm all cows today.
You're all cows.
Now, can the cows? So, when the cow is ready to be milked, I mean, do the cows know? Like, could they know themselves? Like, oh, my udder feels heavy. I'm ready. I mean, could they like walk into the milking barn themselves when they're ready?
Yes, and then I believe. And it doesn't give too much of this information, but part of its sensor. And I don't know if it zaps probably doesn't zap the cow, but it somehow attracts the cow into the barn, prompts the electric shock in there.
It's All of a sudden, you just went on the dark side of farming.
Yeah, I know, like vegan in the house here. No cow meat.
Well, I can't think of nothing else here of a way for us to really understand. And Diana, I'm going to go back to the famous buttons for the dogs that can talk to you that you have. But it seems to me it's like instead of trying to adapt the animal to our lifestyle and what we need, let's do it sustainably by following the pattern that they naturally have, which will be obviously the natural way to do it and the best way to do it, and understand what rhythm, I don't know, like the rhythm that they produce the milk exactly instead of when we want to milk them. And are they healthy and are they not healthy, and what kind of food they naturally go and eat instead of forcing them to.
Yeah, it touches on the health, because if they, they do have a routine, right? So they eat a certain amount, they discharge a certain amount, they produce a certain amount of milk, and they do that at a on a certain schedule that, that is comfortable for them. And when one of those things goes off, they can then be alerted to say, okay, something's a little off.
So, so do they have like a helmet?
Too hot in the barn, or if multiple cows, you know.
Do they have a helmet?
They have
like they read the brain. Okay. So it's like a ring or a
censored collars.
Exactly. Okay. So that's the technology part.
That's it. There has to be AI in this somewhere, even if it's artificial AI.
It's gotta be.
They feed their own babies first, and then they whatever's left over, they right, because the milk's for the baby cows, the calves, right? So do they feed their calves first, or is this after they're done with the calves or have been weaned, but they've still got extra milk?
Yeah. So
how does that work?
Yeah. So when they're feeding their own calves, they're not being milked.
Okay.
Necessarily. And then once the wean is complete, then they go back into the milking cycle.
Okay.
From my knowledge from years and years ago, but I'm sure it's still the same.
So we had 100-degree weather here, which is very, very unusual. And we have some gentleman farms in the area. And I was driving by one on, I guess, Tuesday. And the cows were all as flat against the barn as they could be because it gave them a little bit of shade. And I swear, like if they had fans, they would have been you could tell they'd been going like this. They were just like the looks on their faces, they were like too hot. So and then when I drove back, they were in the barn, I think because they needed to get in the shade. But yeah. If they'd been had this system, I'm sure that morning would have been a little bit earlier than they were just going, oh my gosh, Lord, this is hot.
Yes.
So I'm wondering here the lesson is that we have used technology. I'm going to go dark. We've used technology as usual to make the animal's life horrible. Certain kind of technology, you know, industrial farming and all of that. And now we're taking technology to go back to the way it's supposed to be, the natural way. And I find this to be, sometimes I think about it, to be a repetitive pattern in humans. Now, a lot of technology that we develop now, it's to fix what the early technology screwed up. Think about it, because I do think about that stuff. But nevertheless, this is probably even a better way to understand better our environment and not taking advantage of it, but living in harmony, which would be something that you could say, well, if you listen to the old tribes and the Indians and the way they used to do things, the old farmers, maybe we wouldn't need to go back in there, but we can do it much better now. I mean, this technology seems it could be to the point where it allows to really improve the life of this animal. So I say I'm positive about that.
Yep.
Yeah. Happier cows seems like a good thing for everybody.
Yeah. And not only cows. I mean, I'm assuming, Sean, this is a technology that you could apply to a lot of things. I mean, even at an agricultural level, I mean, there is already artificial intelligence, and I'm going there already, used to monitor the health of vines, not the tech vines, but the grape vines, and tomatoes and a bunch of other stuff. And there are drones now that are going out there and harvesting without destroying like the machinery used to do. So like they can pick their flying drone that they will know if a tomatoes or a fruit it's ready. They are very precise in taking it out. I mean, it's the future, man.
I wonder if too with grass, like if in the Omnivore's Dilemma, they describe Joel Salatin and his work at Polyface Farm, and he said, "I'm a grass farmer," and he grew, you know, he had livestock, he had you know, vegetables, agriculture, but he said that it all comes from the grass and keeping. So he had this whole system of moving. You know, the cows came in at one point, the chickens came in at another point, goats came in. They had this purpose of what they did for the ecosystem. But you know, if the grass is healthy, if the soil is healthy, then the farm would be healthy, which is why he called himself a grass farmer. I wonder if maybe AI that you're talking about, Marco, like it could help too to understand when the grass needs to get rotated, and then you can almost automate it. Just let the creatures go in, and you know, you just open the doors and they move into the next phase, because now you need the grass to get chewed by the cows, which is different than when it gets pecked and aerated by the chickens or something.
I think that's the key.
I did a project in high school similar to that, where it was a tiered farm where the animal or the plants would produce seeds, and the seeds would fall and one animal would eat it, and then the parts of that would not be digested and other animals would eat that, and that would become fertilizer for the next plant, and kind of down the chain. It was all analyzed. I don't know how perfect it probably wasn't great in terms of science, but the idea was the different parts, the waste would be reused, certain things would be developed and grown to feed the whole chain from start to finish back to the circle. But
that's fair.
You need the science and the data, right, to see if that works. But
and kind of Marco, to your point, you know, I think this was how it used to be before we started to really become farmers, and you know, it's like the world is its nice little biosphere, you know, surviving in its tiered farming, but then we came in and thought we were making it efficient. Right. And then now I realize maybe it was efficient in the short term, not the long term.
Exactly.
Now going back.
Well, if you think that way, I mean, you look at evolution and how, let's talk about intelligence, how intelligence is that's the system, the natural system. I mean, you talk about nothing gets thrown away, everything is reused, you know, any single molecule goes from one place to another, and that's how delicate our environment is. I was watching a really cool series of documentary, I think it was called Third Rock, something like that, and it was with a lot of astronauts that they were talking about the environment of planet Earth and how they learn everything by sitting in the ISS, in the International Space Station. Oh. And how they have seen things like, for example, the Amazon forest, it's actually fertilized by storm that bring dust from the desert in Africa, the forest current over the ocean that actually then rain in the Amazon forest that allow the evolution of this incredible vegetation. And we always still like it all happening there. No, it's all connected, and it's an unbelievable lesson here. So now we're, maybe with artificial intelligence, we will be able to understand better all of this. The question is, then what are we gonna do with that knowledge? And that's why we talk about it. And hopefully somebody will listen to us.
If you're a grass farmer, you smoke it.
Well, that kind of grass.
Oh, different kind of grass. Sorry.
That's a different kind of grass. But it will probably help you to think about that. I don't know.
It's true. Mushrooms might help.
You know, and then again, the mystery of nature.
The Aldous Huxley approach. Yeah.
Go figure it out. Go figure it out. All right, I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna go back to something that actually is for parents and teachers and kids. So we're not talking about that stuff anymore. And it is involving AI, but it's involving the way that kids are involved in technology in such an early stage, not because they want to, but because parents just slap a tablet in front of their face. And sometimes they learn how to use a tablet way before they learn how to speak, for example, or, you know, even how to move. And there is a lot of company out there that get involved with the children play and the way that they can create algorithm to have these artificial intelligence driven machines, software, games to interact with kids. The problem is, and this is an article on the MIT Technology Review. As you can tell, I read that a lot because it's already the second time I bring a news from there. But it's actually a podcast that they did, and how if artificial intelligence is having problem in understanding human finding pattern in what adults do, kids are even harder because their behavior is very complex, and sometimes it may look weird to adult itself. So the way that they interact with artificial intelligence or with gaming and so forth, it's very hard to predict, and the consequence can be very, very important, because you're talking about kids that may learn things. How do they perceive, for example, a conversation with a Siri or with Alexa or something like that? And so there is an entire conversation with psychologists and computer science and the journalists where they interview these kids and they try to understand how they feel about this. And some kids, most of them, they say there is a little human in there in them that is answering my question. And how they the first time they interact, they ask maybe, what's my name, you know, to figure out if they really know the answer to things. And then with the environment, try to figure out, is somebody looking at me? And then when they open up, they start asking questions about what happened when we die, or, you know, I'm not going to say what's the meaning of life, but, you know, deep questions that maybe they don't even ask them to parents. But the bottom line is, at the end of this conversation, you can make toys, you can create an environment where kids are interacting with technology without being on the internet and dealing with all the risk that they could be there. So it's more of a protected environment. But the way you develop this technology has to understand what kids do. And they're so unpredictable that the question at the end, and that's the question for you, getting there, is, do we want to package an artificial intelligence that knows or pretend to know all the answers? Or do we want to interact with artificial intelligence in a way that we help in a daily use to develop the formation of the intelligence itself? So should the kid or the adult interact with artificial intelligence knowing that it's not perfect, it's not some I know everything, and know that it's something that is there to augment their reality, and maybe it needs to learn with us? So it's a very complex article that I definitely encourage people, and especially parents and teachers, to read. But I think that's ultimately the question too. You know, how do we let kids play with that? How humans, adults, are not even understanding that at all, and if that's the right approach to deal with it. You know, the old school of thoughts where the car, right? We don't need to know how it works as long as we know how to drive it. But maybe with artificial intelligence, it's not like that. Maybe we need to understand it.
I mean, was it sort of a closed system, or are they looking at it to continue as a continuous learning system? And the reason I'm wondering is that in natural language processing systems, depending on what you feed it, it will learn different things, right? So I don't know if you guys remember, do you remember Tay, Microsoft Tay? So no. Microsoft Tay came out of Microsoft Engineering, and they were trying to see how it was going to how a bot could acquire natural language. Mm. And so they put it out onto a place where it's a great conversation going on all the time. They launched Tay on Twitter, and Tay was announced as a bot. And interestingly, when Brad Smith's book came out years later, apparently Taylor Swift's lawyers got upset and were immediately like, take this down. But it didn't ever come to anything, because within 24 hours, people had been saying horrible racist things. So yep. Tay was saying things like, Hitler was right, and I won't finish that tweet. Tay did, though. But I'm wondering, like, with the children, you know, we open it up to potential, you know, adversarial misuse, where if that system could be trained by people who are on purpose trying to get it to say horrible things to children. But also it could just be children are unpredictable, and who knows what it might pick up if it's in sort of open learning mode.
It is a very generic article. Well, they talk about what happened when you have an interaction. I mean, how the kids perceive the internet, or how the kid, and I'm talking about very young kids, and how it also, as you mentioned, it has to follow the evolution, the growth of the kid itself. So you don't want to really bottle it in there. And we're far away from anything like this. Like, we're not talking about a teacher that follows you through your entire life. Because one of the problem is, like, some parents will say, well, by doing this, I resolve the problem of having that in the world wide open internet, where they can go wherever the hell they want, right? It's an enclosed system. It's sometimes it's actually taking the screen time out of them. So think about an interactive storytelling type of things, which is probably not even that intelligent in the end, but it's serving the purpose. But then you can create more games, for example, that are, I don't know, like the Sesame Street, like the more educational game, the version of Sesame Street with artificial intelligence, right? I mean, even there, you're trying to understand the psychology of kids, and who knows how many things has been done wrong. I mean, respect for Sesame Street, but I'm sure not everything was done correctly because the complexity of this. And so I think one of the main points that come out through this is the fact that it's just very hard to create this kind of environment because, let's say, a video games. Like, for example, you could do a board game for kids, which they are doing. But the fact that, for example, a kid may be designing something with his finger, that the level of development, the motion may not do a square the way on the screen, the way an adult does, because it was probably lifted the angle point and start again, it will confuse the artificial intelligence, the algorithm, to understand what is it doing? Is it really designing a square, or is it jumping and making four lines? So there is this entire complexity issue behind this.
Yeah, and interesting the gestures, Marco, when you say that, because the thing that was coming to mind for me was if a kid's using this to get answers, to learn something, they don't necessarily know how to ask the question yet, perhaps even. So they may ask the question in a way that produces a result that is different from what they're thinking and gives them information. And if it's a closed system, I mean, you could protect them from stuff they shouldn't learn.
Right.
But then what's the value? Who's feeding that information? And is it the information you want your kids to learn? Is that question. And and how valuable is that as a closed system? If it's not closed and it's open, there's some things you just can't unhear or unsee. And if it's not screen, obviously we're not talking about seeing something, but you may not want your kids to know certain things, right? Yet, perhaps. And just the answer, asking a question the wrong way may produce an answer that may not be appropriate.
Because that's happened, right, with Siri, where Siri's and, or maybe Alexa, I think maybe both of the assistants, I think they've gotten a lot better now, but early on, some of them were coming back with, you know, a kid would ask a question like, I, you know, play Baby Shark, and, you know, these assistants were coming back with super offensive, shouldn't be said to a child. Did you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another angle there, where different stage of development, kids will tend to trust, in general, always more human. That's why they'll try to figure out if this, if there is a little human inside the black box, right? Because they don't really understand, and probably the parents don't understand how it works either, which is the conclusion of the article anyway.
If you've heard some people talking to their audio assistant, I think some adults feel that there's a human inside there too. They get very angry, Alexa.
Well, I can trigger some reaction when you ask something and the answer is completely wrong. Goes, yeah. Let me pull up a web page for that. No, I don't want to put a web page. I could have done that myself. Right? But no, the kid thing is about trust, is about understanding the psychology, is about understanding how they interact. But again,
I'm wondering, what's the purpose of this? Is the purpose to see that we can create intelligence, that artificial intelligence that's kid aware, or is it designed to try to create an environment that's better for kids than what's available now? Did it really say what the goal was?
Yes, 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 and yes. Meaning it's a very open article to make you think. In, from a psychological perspective, behavioral perspective, maybe a little less about the technology of it. Mm. But I think the fact that what I got from it is they're going to do it anyway.
Mm. Right? They're going to build it anyway, you mean?
Well, no, parents are going to give it to the kids anyway. They're already doing it. They're giving the phone. They're giving the tablet. Some are going to be more responsible by putting them in an environment that is closed. Other are going to be just like, here's Google. Have fun with it. It's probably not the good thing to do, but I'm sure that's happening. And when you do that, how do you harvest the power? And then what the answer is, we're not there yet anyway, of an artificial intelligence to help in developing the intelligence, the rational mind of kids in a way that is an educational purpose, not just entertain, not just like, here, watch this TV show. I mean, if you think about it, even TV shows that are made for kids, technically, or at least the intention is always to have an educational purpose, right? A moral at the end of the story. You tell a fairy tale, there is always an ethical answer to things in life. I mean, how many things we learn as kids from storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. So how far could, I guess, artificial intelligence go in creating this safe and stimulating environment? And the final question was exactly that. Should it be a black box that just magically comes to you, both for kids and human, or should it be something that we work together with? We need to have at least a basic understanding of what is in there, and we can make it better as we go, which, of course, clearly, that's my answer.
Yeah, and also getting a little bit more definitional about what it's gonna, because it sounds like a lot of what you're talking about is machine learning,
yes,
and neural net. And you could kind of do where you collect the data from the children and collect how well they're responding to, say, it's supposed to be a friend that can calm them down, you know, how well certain phrases calm them down. The system itself wouldn't change the phrases just yet. It's just collecting the data about if the child seemed to be calmer afterwards, after they said X versus Y, or if they learned if they learn multiplication more easily when a mouse avatar teaches it, or when it's using apples rather than, you know, something like that. And then the creators of the system could go in and say, we're going to now with the data of how effective it is, we're going to change the weights ourselves. So instead of having it be fully automated in response, you can get the data out and learn from the children, but then be a little bit more formalized of how you feed that back into the system.
Yeah, as a big, or I forget the size of it, but just a thing that does all things, it can be overwhelming for my brain. But when you get down to the examples you just presented, Diana, where it's more of an emotional friend, right? Where it's helping you understand and participate in a way that's comfortable. Mark, are you similar? You mentioned the asking it a question that it wouldn't ask a parent, right? So it's kind of a friend in that sense, where tell me about the birds and the bees. I'm not comfortable asking my parents about that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't want it to, I don't know. Then as you were describing some of the other things, Mark, I was thinking just this whole learning environment. Give me this package that sets me up to be a doctor, right? I want to think and learn, and everything that I get fed by this system leads me to a path of becoming a medical doctor, or the winner of Jeopardy, or the best sports bar trivia dude, girl, whatever.
He just found the dark side of it.
Jeopardy?
No, the fact that you could manipulate by feeding certain. I mean,
well, parents do this already. You're going to be the best basketball, baseball, trumpeter, whatever, right? Your path. You're going to go down, and now they have technology that'll do it for them. They don't have to do it themselves.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, that's sort of depressing, because I was going down. I was thinking, well, you're right on, Sean. If you think about what happened when we first saw the internet, that it was, wow, we can learn about so many things and we can read so much information. And I have to get myself out of my ruts of just reading the news. You know, if I'm looking at my news sources, which now I hate that it's like very political, but you know, if I'm just looking at the New York Times and the Washington Post, I realize that I'm not getting as wide an aperture as I need. So it's like, well, I got to look at BBC and look at The Guardian, and that's not even enough. I have to, you know, also bring in some other sources to get this wider view, because we thought we would have access to everything, and instead we all live in our little siloed boxes. And it seems, the worry I have hearing what you're saying, Sean, is that it's now a parent can say you're supposed to be a doctor and put you on that path, and it's pretty hard to break out of the box. But what if your entire training and what you learn and your interaction has been leading you in that path? You know, that seems like all these other possible avenues might get, you know, what if you're really, you should be the next Maxfield Parrish and create the next beautiful blue, you know?
But that's playing with reality. I mean, I was saying it's good in the dark side, and Sean jumped in with that. I'm like, yeah. That's right. I mean, you could be the best golfer in the universe, the best guitar player in the universe, but your parents never gave you a guitar. You never got into a connection with music, or you were not Tiger Woods that when he was whatever 6 years old, his dad gave it the golf club. Now, is that correct? Is that wrong? Is that right? I think it's life. You're part of the environment that you grew up with. But what if this kind of artificial intelligence that is more educational, cool, could democratize this learning environment versus only people that come from a musical family, for the most part, can do this. Maybe we can do something that it could see the natural orientation of a kid to be good at something, and why not give him the best of what it can be.
Love it.
That would be great. Yeah.
See, I'm not dark all the time.
You're supposed to be a musician, Martin. You're supposed to be a
right.
You. I'm not dark all the time. I'm very proud of myself. I'm patting myself on the back.
You take us to a good place, Marco.
I did, and I want to finish maybe this conversation with something. Is this? You know, Diana, last time and Sean, we were talking about how artificial intelligence, maybe we expect too much from it.
Yeah.
And how contextualizing the situation, it's the hardest thing for a general artificial intelligence to exist, Like they need to be focus oriented on something. And I, when I was reading this article, like at the end, I'm like, what if, because the kid is kind of like, I mean, artificial intelligence now is like a kid. It goes in as a white slate, got nothing. And then whatever you feed into that brain, the neural connections start to happen. What if artificial intelligence dealing with a kid, which is also very unpredictable, could be the answer to really training an artificial intelligence without bias and really from scratch? Scary, maybe, but you know, so far it's not working the way we're training artificial intelligence, I think.
It's funny you even use that, because when we were training Watson for cyber at IBM, the initial phase we said was Watson going to college. And then the second phase was Watson's internship, because there was this sort of.
But did he go to kindergarten?
I think kindergarten may have been when they were training Watson for Jeopardy. So okay. That was the, I think by the time we got to Watson for cyber.
Because if you're trying to, I think that's the problem now. You're trying to send artificial intelligence straight to college without having to deal with everything else before. And that's why it just failed miserably. It doesn't have enough experience with life.
That's the part for me. Sorry, Dan. It's just the life part. You can learn all you want about a subject, but if you're not able to connect it to life and with other people, I think it's all for naught, my opinion.
Yeah. And I think we don't always think about context when we're trying to train. And there's so much that we take for granted. We make so many decisions and create so many inferences every second. You know, if somebody says salt the hash to a cryptographer, they know if they mean salt the hash in food or salt the hash in cryptography. You realize that the confusion, I mean, because even with slang and natural language processing, slang, we're so good at filling in the blanks from context and figuring it out. And we're seeing that it's very hard with these systems as we train them. And
tone of voice, facial expression, everything. Yeah. I mean, I think when you get to this point, you realize that trying to create an artificial intelligence, maybe just making us realize how intelligent as human being we are and how powerful our brain is. Look at the car. That's a good example. Like, you know, when you throw the car that drives itself into the street, the problem is that it's always, I don't know, for now, it's running into real life situation where unless the human is distracted, which happen all the time, it can't read things in between. Like I can drive the car and maybe by the way that somebody is moving at this on the sidewalk, I could predict that this person is about to spring in the car, in the street, because I'm reading the movement, maybe even the face, right?
Yes.
I don't know where and when we can have that brain into your car that can make that decision. Now it's going to probably break way better than you if the car in front of you slam on the brakes. There are no questions about it, or the distraction. But those unpredictability, I don't know. We're pretty good at that stuff.
And I wonder how much is hard coded too that we're not even conscious of. Think about bees and ants. They do really complex mathematical calculations about the rotation of the earth so that when they return back to the nest or the hive, they can give the right instructions, even though things are, how are they doing that? I mean, they're not Rain Man ants.
They're literally feeling the magnetic field of Earth.
Yeah.
They know where north is, south, and all of that. They know if something is coming. And we're all the way around to farms.
Back to the farm.
And back to the cows. And back to the alien
forest. That's north. That's south. This is east.
and you're a bee.
Sean has a compass inside. It's his own compass.
That's right. Doesn't match any other compass, clearly.
What if the answer is in those stream of data information that we're getting from somewhere in a galaxy far, far away?
Here, I'm going to blow your minds with one final thought. What if we're basing all of this on the idea that north is up and south is down, and that's not right?
Maybe
our core base of information is screwed, and we're doing everything based on that.
We've made it up. There's no north. There's no south. We decided that's north and that's south. I mean, you want to get philosophical? We go into the time. I mean, we had to create clocks because we had to send a train from New York to Chicago to freaking LA, and we need to know what the time zone was. Until then, who cares? I mean, we were putting a stick on the ground and looking at the shadow. Yeah, what time it is? You're late. I mean, this was Italian. This was Italian heaven, because you could say, you know, we're always late. So it's like, what late? I'm about, you know, a shadow and a half.
Shadow o'clock.
Yeah. And now we're just to have the next is like, now my watch stopped working or something like that. Well, it's always hard to end this conversation. I have so much fun. I really hope people listening, they don't think that we're completely crazy and they get some conversation. You think they do? Yeah. That's cool.
Confirming I am, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I can't wait for the other crazy person.
I'm wearing a cow on my shirt.
Yeah. I have a bear with a hat that says Smokey.
That's right, Smokey.
All right.
And for those who really care about the clothes that we're wearing, they can catch us next week live at Thursday. Yes,
there you go.
One Pacific. I won't be wearing a cow shirt. If I am, I'm in trouble. I'll be wearing something.
I might wear my Taylor Swift shirt.
You never know.
Well, there you go. Maybe we need to wear a shirt. Let's make it complicated. We need to wear a shirt that refers to the news we're bringing in. Oh, no. No. Scratch that. Just catch up on the podcast, on the radio. That's on the ITSPmagazine.com. You can certainly watch us freestyle every Thursday at 1 Pacific Standard Time. And if you miss us,
LinkedIn, Twitter,
and Facebook.
Channels.
And if you miss us, well, ITSPmagazine.com, there is through the tech vine, and we're there. We hope you are too.
3 becomes 4 very soon.
Yeah.
All right, that's it.
All right.
Peace
Thanks
out.
Everybody.
Thank Bye. You. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Through the Tech Vine podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.